Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. I feel like I just talk about Contact all day now, because the next application on the list is KOrganizer, which is a component of Contact, or it can be. It can be launched as a separate application, but I usually interface with it through Contact, and so that's what I'll assume everyone does, which is not a safe assumption by any means, but that's what I'm doing anyway. And no matter how you get there, I mean, I think KOrganizer looks strange to me outside of Contact, because it's so small compared to all of the different widgets and things in Contact. But it's a calendaring application, first of all, and it's pretty much what you would expect, I think. I mean, you've got on the upper left corner, you have an overview of the month, and then under that is an item selection box. And right now it's empty. It just says no item selected. This is my favorite feature of KOrganizer. That empty box becomes a really, really convenient widget momentarily. Below that, there's a list of all the calendars you have subscribed to. By default, if I recall correctly, there are maybe one or two. One is birthdays and anniversaries, which is extracted from your contacts. And I think there was a personal one there as well, personal calendar default. Yeah, that's correct. Okay, and then in the next column from, or the next panel over from that, is the calendar in some configuration, some view of a calendar. There are lots of different views that you can have. You could look at it through as a month. So it's just a big grid with lots of days on it and little slivers of appointments. Or events. You can look at it as a timeline, which kind of gives you almost a project manager style overview. You can view it as in what they call the agenda mode. And if you click on agenda, that sort of unlocks the day and the week view as well. So those are your options. Pretty straightforward stuff. Nothing super, super exciting really, but I'm going to go back to the month view for a minute and I'm going to click on this event here, some arbitrary event in my calendar, and the little box over on the left that I told you was very exciting, was empty before. Now that I've clicked on this event, that box is populated with all the data from that event. I realize that doesn't sound like that exciting of a UI choice, but if you've used other calendaring applications or web apps where you either have to click into an event to a whole other screen to see just the rudimentary data about it, or you have to drag over the event and it pops up an instant preview of most of the data but not all, and then you can't get rid of the stupid preview. So this does have a preview. It's a tooltip. You can just hover over a thing and then you've got a tooltip that appears, so you don't have to click into it. But if you want all of the data with all of the information about that event, you just click on the event. You're still in your main view, but you also have the details about that event over on the left. And I love that design choice. It seems so silly, so simple, and yet really it's a big deal. It's a great little feature of KOrganizer. I don't use KOrganizer as often as I kind of wish I did. In a way, I could do more calendaring. I could do better at calendaring. I use it mostly. I use calendaring at work mostly, or to coordinate with other people in real life. But a lot of that is just done through other people's calendars, and I do feel like I could be a little bit better at that sort of thing. But or rather, I could be better. I could get more experience on KOrganizer were I to use it more often for calendaring. But as it stands, I don't do that much calendaring in KOrganizer. If anything, it's on my work laptop in Evolution, because that's running GNOME. So that's as much as I know about KOrganizer. Well, that's not true. You can also, of course, subscribe to calendars, and that's the way that calendaring is done over the iCalendar or iCal or DavCal, several different protocols, and this talks to them all. So if I right click over in this subscription area, I can add a calendar, which, by the way, this terminology, I hate this terminology, and I know it's not K-Organizer's terminology. It is, I think it's just the iCal or iCalendar. I forget which is the open one. I think it must be iCal. It's that terminology, but I can't stand the concept of, I can't get used to the concept of adding a calendar, because to me, K-Organizer is the calendar. I see the grid, I see the date, the days and the dates. Like, that's the calendar. How can you add a calendar to a calendar? I just, that terminology, I will never be used to it, I don't think. I wish it was something, if we could just use some other term for the parcels, the packages that you bring into a calendar. It could be agenda, it could be event listings, it could be I don't know, something. But I cannot think of adding a calendar, because the calendar is the calendar. I'm not adding a calendar to it, I'm adding items to my calendar. It's terminology. Anyway, when you go to add calendar, you can add birthdays and anniversaries, and as I say, that's all extracted from your contact list. So that's already done for you by KDE, the PIM suite in KDE. But you also have things like Dav Groupware resources, Google Groupware, K-Alarm, which we've made on this show a couple of times. We've done some K alarms. Microsoft Exchange Server, OpenExchange, Groupware Server, iCal Calendar File, iCal Calendar Folder. I don't love any of the iCal or any of the calendar formats that I've used, to be honest. I think they're just, none of them are exactly what I want. I would love to have sort of a simple version of calendaring, where it was some, minimal markup file, like an RSS feed, but minimal preferably. So I guess more like Atom feed, but even more minimal maybe. And where you could just publish that onto your server, and then people could subscribe to that, which I know people can do with RSS or Atom. But I just wish there was some kind of integration into calendars for that. And I know that's not every use case, because a lot of times you want your calendar events to be read and write. But for me, sometimes I just want to coordinate with a group of people. I just want to create an event that transcends time zones, that'll be translated by their local client. And I just want to throw that somewhere on a server, let them subscribe to it so that it appears on their calendar. And I just can't find a really, really easy way to do that. I mean, I guess the easy way, I guess, is to create like a Nextcloud calendar and distribute that as a subscribable entity. But that's just not always that to me seems like overkill maybe. So that's KOrganizer, really. It's a great little application. It's a great component of contact. It's pretty darn useful. Now there's a bunch of different libraries and bits and pieces that I don't have a whole lot of experience with, and so it seems silly for me to talk about in detail. So I'm going to kind of just mention them sort of quickly. So KOSM Indoor Map, it's an OpenStreetMap formatted helper library, so that if you're writing an application and you want to display not just a map, but specifically an indoor map, which I don't believe I've ever interfaced with these before. But I do know that it's possible, where you can go in, sort of go, quote, into a building in a map software, and then get the floor layout of the interior of that building. So that's what this does, KOSM Indoor Map. I'm going to skip K Package for a moment, because that I actually do know something about. Then there's K Parts. That's some header files mostly that helps various KDE applications kind of keep track of like active widgets that have changed, and so on. KPAT, I'm going to skip that for a moment, because that's useful. So KPeople is a library to parse and interpret data about people, like your contact list. And there's an accompanying library, kpeople vcard, which makes the vcard, the contact form, available to kpeople. And then you use kpeople colon colon like people model, and then you can and that will be populated. That will be an object. I could be wrong about the exact name of the class, but whatever it is, there would be an object that represents a person with all the data about that person. If you're writing an application that that needs to represent people from the contacts list, then this is what you would use: kpeople, kpeople vcard. Kpim text edit, another PIM suite related thing. This is the text editor within various PIM components that permits the user to put in text, and this will translate it to other formats. So you get rich text or, whatever, like fancy text, but this library can also export it to HTML or whatever you might need it to export to or convert to when you're exporting data. KPK Pass. KPK Pass is an Apple Wallet library. It allows people to interact with Apple Wallet. I don't know what Apple Wallet is. According to, I think it was developer.apple.com, it says that it's an app on iPhone, iPod Touch, and Apple Watch, allowing users to easily manage payment cards, boarding passes, tickets, gift cards, and other passes. So it's a vault. It's a data vault, probably encrypted, I would assume, with that kind of information in it. And KPK Pass lets KDE, or your KDE application that you're developing, interface with Apple Wallet. I have no experience, hopefully will never have any experience with that. Kplotting, this is a plotting library. So if you're writing something that needs to display data in some kind of graphical form, specifically a plot, then kplotting is the library that you could use to do that. KPM Core. KPM Core is a library for managing partitions. Now, we're going to talk later about a partition manager for KDE, and that presumably, I haven't looked at that code yet, and I probably won't. I mean, it's not that big of a deal, but I would imagine KPM Core is probably used in partition manager for KDE. We don't talk about that for a while because it doesn't start with a K, and we're very much in the K section, as you've probably noticed. So we'll get to partition manager once we're out of the K blah section. KPTY is essentially a TTY interface, but not really. It's a pseudo terminal interface. That's pseudo, not sudo, but pseudo, pseudo terminal interface, as well as apparently a kprocess-derived class for running child processes and communicating with them using a PTY. So you'll recall a long time ago we were talking about Getty and AGetty and I think InGetty. That provides the text console when you boot up Slackware for the first time. That's known as a TTY. Well, there is also a PTY, this pseudo. I don't know what that stands for. I'm assuming it's pseudo, just because of what I read in the description. PTY, yeah, pseudo. It's a pseudo TTY interface. So it's not really a TTY. I mean, TTY isn't even really a TTY. TTY stands for teletype something. Whereas PTY is the software implementation of that. So KPTY is KDE's software implementation of the software implementation of TTY. Kpublic Transport, it's a library for accessing real-time public transport data. This is probably, I would imagine, used by Kitinerary, for instance, which is kind of, I mean, that's the feature of Kitinerary. You can put in your trips, and it knows that trip, it can now track that trip. So that's really, really nice. I mean, really nice, really cool. But it's not something that I'm going to be using in a town of 400 as I currently live in. So that's probably not going to be something that I use often, at least not for a while. Okay, KQt Quick Charts is a cute quick plugin to render beautiful and interactive charts, and it goes along with K Quick Charts, which is a module providing a set of charts that can be used from Qt Quick applications. So they go hand in hand. K Quick Charts provides you stuff that you can use with your K Qt Quick Charts in Qt Quick. Qt Quick being a, I don't want to say code light, because that I think that might be a term that means something else, but it's a simplified sort of interface for writing Qt applications. It's quite cool. I keep meaning to play around with it, and I never have the right project, I don't think. Although, I might be formulating some, but who knows? Okay, so that's a bunch of libraries that I don't know anything about, and now we can focus on this stuff on a couple of things that I do know a little something about. The first one, going back up the list here, is kpackage. Kpackage is a KDE5 framework that lets applications manage user-installable packages of non-binary assets. I don't know why it's expressed exactly that way. I'm wondering if that's a little bit too much assertion that is non-binary. But I guess it could be non-binary. I bet you could install stuff that's binary though. But anyway, kpackage. Did you know that KDE had a package manager? You might have suspected it, because certainly if you track KDE these days, then you know that there's a KDE, I think it's called Discover program, and that's like a software, an app store for KDE. But kpackage actually is something, as far as I know, different from that. And it actually is an interface through which you can install like plasmoids or the wall, like, fresh wallpapers when you click on K get new stuff or whatever that button is in the when you're looking through wallpapers and window decoration themes and desktop themes and things like that. So you've probably indirectly used kpackage if you've downloaded anything through system settings. You've probably used that. At least I should say, this is my understanding. I know for sure that kpackage can install plasmoids, and I know that for sure because I did a really fun little tutorial on plasmoids on the KDE website, and it is I highly recommend it. It was a really good little tutorial. I will put the link in the show notes, but it's a development tutorial on Plasma 5 QML2 for, predictably a simple little Hello World application. But at the end, you're able to install it to your machine, and you use directly kpackage. And the use of kpackage is relatively simple. You tell kpackage, well, first of all, it's not kpackage, it's kpackage tool 5, and then dash t for type plasma slash applet dash dash install, and then the path or the, yeah the path to your source code. So like tilde slash my project slash hello world slash plasmoid. Kpackage generates a JSON file describing your little application and installs it to the appropriate place, which is, tilde slash dot local slash share slash plasma slash plasmoids, pops it into there. It is named according to a property that you created during the tutorial, and then you can go to your like add a widget menu, add widgets, like if you right click on the desktop, add widgets, and there's Hello World. Like there's the thing that you created in the list of available plasmoids. It's really satisfying, actually. It's really cool. You should definitely go do that if you're at all interested in that sort of thing. So kpackage, anyway, it knows what to expect. It knows what you're going to hand it according to the type of application you're asking it to install, and it knows where to put that stuff. So that's what kpackage does. It's a little bit like KDE's version of, let's say, GNU install, or yeah, I guess it's like a scripted version of GNU install. Which, by the way, I still think that GNU install is the worst example of namespace squatting I've ever seen. It still pains me that the wonderfully intuitive word install as a command is occupied by a very sort of specific low-level command that just doesn't really do what it sounds like it's doing. It's really just a fancy copy. I mean, I know that's all an install really is, but wouldn't it be great if Linux distributions like just had the word install symlinked to its package manager, and then you wouldn't have to figure out the special commands for each different distribution's package manager. You could just install foo, and foo would be installed. It would be so nice. Anyway, I digress. kpackage, it's a simple thing. It kind of calls itself kpackage, and you think, oh, this must be some kind of a package manager, but it's not. It isn't really. I mean, not when we think of DNF and apt and so on. It's just a simple installer, really. But it is useful. I mean, it's useful because if you're creating things that are, with a predictable structure for the KDE desktop, then kpackage knows how to handle those, all the different files. Okay, next up is kpat. This is a card game. It's a solitaire card game specifically. No, actually, it's several solitaire games. It looks like, there's five across and three down currently. This is highly adjustable, so actually you can make it any size that you want, which is really nice. So anyway, it's like, 14 games in here. There's Aces Up, Baker's Dozen, Castle, 40 and 8, Free Cell, Grandfather, Klondike, Simple Simon, Spider, Yukon, lots of, and more, lot but lots of them. And you click into one and it lays out the cards for you, deals them, and then you play the game. And like I say, there are 14 different games, so it doesn't make any sense really to try to figure out or try to talk about how each game is played. There is a very, very cool thing, which is a demo button at the top, and it plays the game for you, basically. And whether or not you understand what you're seeing is a different question, because really it does it just plays the game. It doesn't give you the logic. It doesn't tell you why it's doing what it's doing. It just starts moving cards around. So I don't know how useful it is, but it might be. There's also a hint button, so that kind of hints towards, possibly the next move. But again, it doesn't necessarily tell you what the next move is. It just or what to do with the card that it highlights. It's just telling you there's something about this card that you should be looking at. So you do kind of have to know what the game is that you're getting into, or else you will be lost. However, there is a handbook, and it does the handbook does cover each game for you. So if you need to learn a new solitaire game, then it does provide the rules. Klondike is the most famous patience. Oh, kpat means patience. I forgot to mention that. Most likely because it comes with a well-known operating system. It is played with one deck. The goal in Klondike is to put all cards, all real families ascending on the foundation. This gets easier once all cards are lying face up, and so on. So yeah, it does describe every single game that it ships with. So you can learn a bunch of solitaire games. I have to admit, I'm not a big solitaire player. I mean, I do play a lot of solitaire games, but not the poker deck solitaire game variety. Not for any good reason. I actually quite admire that sort of thing, because I think that designing a game for one person is frequently difficult. That's a real technique, I think. So the fact that there are so many and that they use the same kind of deck, I just think that's so cool. I really admire, I have a lot of admiration for a standard deck. I don't know that that's the best deck for what it is. Like I wonder if people developing that deck a long time ago, coming as it did from, traditional tarot decks and stuff. I wonder if they would have, if that's the deck that would have evolved, if they had known that it was going to last for several hundred years and be the default deck of cards for so many different games. But the fact that that's just one deck of cards and that it has evolved into so many games. I mean, this is 14 solitaire games in this one application, and that's by no means not every solitaire game that exists. Nor is it every game based on that deck of cards. You can do a lot with just a simple poker deck. It's really, really, really neat. With all of that having been said, this is not a game that I will likely use all that often. Or who knows, maybe it'll be the thing that gets me into solitaire. Of course, it's the same. It's the typical KDE game suite sort of setup. You've got a really nice interface. You can go to settings and change the appearance drastically. I prefer Oxygen Air myself, but there's also Ancient Egyptian, there's Dondorf, there's Niku Ornamental. I know Niku vaguely from the Fedora project. Standard penguins. So lots of different card decks that you can use. Oh, and there's even that you can theme the table as well. That's cool. I didn't realize that. I didn't even notice that. And of course, you can get new themes, which, as far as I know, uses kpackage to install new themes. Is there anything else? Oh yeah, well the fact that there's the it's highly scalable. And I don't know if they're using actual SVGs for this. I guess we could find out if we do a less on slash var slash log slash packages kpat. Let's look for SVG. Oh, it does. It does. So these are Oh, those are the themes. Okay, so does it do? Well, yeah, I don't know if those are the themes for the cards. Either way, there's a bunch of SVG Zeds, which are compressed SVGs. So I wonder if that's a sprite. It's probably a sprite sheet, essentially, is what that is. Oh, that's very cool. That's very neat. So yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful little interface on a technical level. I mean, I don't know. There might be even more beautiful interfaces for cards now. I don't play cards so much on computers. I think it's really nice, though. I think there's a lot to be said for that interface. It's very, very nice. So that's kpat. It's pretty cool. It's a neat little game if you're into that sort of thing. So check it out. For now, though, I think it's time for a little break. So let's go get some coffee, come back, finish up the show. And we're back. I have coffee and still not that special summer blend that I was talking about last time. I haven't ordered it yet because I'm not out of my other coffee. And I don't want to order one and then let the other sort of languish. So I need to finish the current batch. And that's okay. I can wait. I mean, summer technically hasn't even started here in New Zealand, so it's early technically yet for the summer blend of coffee. Okay, so I'm skipping around a little bit here in the list. If you're carefully following along, you'll notice that I did some things out of order. And I'm gonna do that again because the next application called actually did I skip one? I feel like I skipped one. KPK pass, K people, K pat, K parts, K package. No, okay, I did it. All right, so the next one in my list is KRDC, but that depends heavily upon KRFB. You can't really use one without the other. I mean, strictly that's, I guess, not true, but I think realistically you're probably going to be using both. And either way, we're going to talk about both. So, I think in the workflow, it starts with KRFB. And if not exactly KRFB, then something like KRFB. So KRFB is the desktop sharing application of KDE. Lately, at least in as of Slackware 15.0, I have noticed that it appears to be sort of an not an always on, but an always available kind of application. So if I click on the KDE system tray for like this in the status and notification pop-up window or menu, one of the selections there is desktop sharing. And if I click on that, KRFB appears. I'm telling you this specifically because I spent quite some time for a while trying to launch KRFB from the KDE, the K menu, and it didn't appear to be failing, but also it didn't appear, a window wasn't appearing, and that was confusing me, and I thought something was just dying silently, but actually it was just launching itself into, or it had already launched into, the system tray. So be aware of that. You might have to go to your system tray, look around for desktop sharing, click that, and the window appears. The window is called desktop sharing, which is awfully confusing for an application called KRFB. KRFB stands for KDE Remote Frame Buffer. Rolls right off the tongue, doesn't it? So desktop sharing is kind of a simple window. You need to check, you need enable for a check mark, enable desktop sharing. It provides you with your connection details. This is a hypothetical connection because no connection is active. But as long as you've got that enable desktop sharing, essentially you have started a VNC server. VNC is a virtual network connection, and that's the thing that lets you connect to other computers graphically across a network. It's like SSH, but it's got the whole graphic stack along with it. And you might think, well, that sounds like SSH with X forwarding. It does, but it's still different because rather than just sending things over a protocol, or well, it is sending things over a protocol, but it's not using the X, the Zorg X, Xorg X11, whatever protocol. It is broadcasting JPEGs, essentially an animation, an interactive animation of the screen that you want to look at. So it's kind of heavier than X forwarding SSH, arguably, but it also kind of, I mean, there are benefits to that because, you know, you're getting, well, literally and figuratively, the big picture. You're getting the full thing. So that's VNC. You are running, if you've started this and enabled desktop sharing, you're now running a VNC server on port 5900. So connection details, this is a great, great display of connection details. This is one of my favorite. It has the host name, in case you have DNS on your local network, and it's got the IP address. Admittedly, this is a little confusing, possibly, because it's got both the host and then the IP in parentheses and then colon 5900. And I guess if you've never done this before, you might be quite confused as to what exactly the address is that they're telling you to go to. So maybe, I don't know, maybe for how complete that is in terms of the information, maybe it would have been even better if it had just been hostname.domain:5900, and then maybe on the next line, 192.168.1.23:5900. So you knew that you could go to either of those two places to get to this screen. And then there's a password. The password by default is just a randomized alphanumeric with a special character thing. I think possibly there's room for improvement here as well. Frankly, I think that I don't think that any such random password like that is going to be conducive to conversations when you're trying to help someone over a phone, for instance. You know, they've called you up, they need help on their computer, you're the person who knows Linux, quick, what do? You have them fire this application up, and then you have them read the password over, BGUF-9FU, wait, was that B as in beta, or D as in delta, or V as in Victor, G, was that G as in golf, or is it V as in Victor? You know, like, it's just gonna, it goes on and on, right? Like, everything they say, you're just gonna, I think it would be much easier to have some kind of randomized, you know, phrase generator where it sounds like a sentence. I think that would be a lot better. To the credit of this application, though, it's quite easy to change it. You can click the little pencil icon and make that password GNU World Order underscore 487.opus. There. Now we all know what the password is. It's GNU World Order underscore 487.opus with a capital G at the start. It's just in it cap. So there you go. Unattended access. Can you get into a password without explicit confirmation from the other side? You can check that on or off. So that's KRFB. and you need one of those or a VNC server running on your target, on your destination computer, on the place that you want to be on. That has to be running before you can actually use KRDC, which is the actual application I'm supposed to be talking about. KRDC stands for KDE Remote Desktop Connection. You can connect to desktops over two different protocols through this application. There's VNC and then there's RDP. RDP, I think, is a Windows thing. I don't know really anything about it, but VNC is exactly what we've got going on over here in KRFB. So I could type in the IP address, and then I don't think I have to follow it by the colon 5900 because I believe it just figures that out on its own. Oh, I know what I'm doing. I'm typing in the wrong password. It's funny that I did that because I very specifically set the password. So upon entering the correct password, yes, it does append the 5900. Of course, if I'd wanted to, if I knew that I had been running VNC on a non-standard port, then I could have included the colon 5901 or 6400 or whatever port I was running VNC on. But in this case, it's the default, so who cares? Put in the IP, put in the correct password to get onto that remote system, and then you've got your desktop, and you can make your desktop image full screen so that it feels like you're actually just using that computer instead of your own computer. You can make it small. You can adjust the bandwidth that it's going to require by compressing the image more. You can observe or you can take control of the mouse and so on. Like, you know, it's desktop sharing. So it's everything that you would sort of imagine. This is the sort of thing, I mean, I used to use this all the time at jobs. It was, you know, just for support and for maintenance and things like that. It's a brilliant, brilliant little system. Really love it. I mean, a lot of people sort of have an antagonistic relationship to VNC because, especially if they're, you know, Linux users, they think, well, SSH and exforwarding should be enough for anybody. But realistically, VNC is a very broadly accepted, universally available protocol. It's getting comfortable with it, getting used to it, making it sort of the norm is actually kind of nice. And I guess that's the new trend anyway, because as far as I understand, Wayland isn't going to have like an equivalent Wayland forwarding option. I believe that's correct. I think that's a pity. I do think there's probably room for that sort of thing, but I guess it's less now. And frankly, a lot of the times when I was exforwarding anyway, if you start getting too complex in terms of what you're forwarding, I don't know. I experienced environment problems. Like, you know, I would I an environment variable wouldn't come through for, you know, I'm sure that it was my fault. I'm sure it was my environment not being configured optimally for what I was doing. All I'm saying is that sometimes that would happen. Whereas with VNC, because you're just eavesdropping on the screen, you're just getting the screen. The environment is still on that remote computer. It just, I don't know, everything sort of just kind of worked that way. I'm honestly not saying VNC is necessarily better than exforwarding. I'm simply saying that it is, there are certain conveniences to VNC, and I'm not antagonistic towards it. I'm fine with VNC making that process easier. There may well be someone out there who has very, very legitimate uses of exforwarding and hates to see that going away. And I can respect that because I've seen some amazing things done with exforwarding, definitely. All I know is that for my simple use cases, VNC is actually quite convenient. So that's KRDC and KRFB, which I'll have to remember eventually. Although, you know what? It's so close now. I think we can get through KRename and KReverse before I end this episode. So KRename is a powerful, it says, batch renamer for KDE. Look, any batch renamer is good to me. Rename and Thunar, KRenamer, it's an amazing, amazing thing. It's one of those things, it is literally one of the things that brought me to Linux. I say that about a lot of things. And I mean, you know, obviously when you're making a switch of your operating system, there is usually some single triggering thing that you can identify in theory and say, well, that was the moment that I put down the other one and picked up Linux. But once you're sort of it's not an overnight thing, and you're kind of like you're evaluating and you're experiencing and you're deciding whether this is like a hobby, just a thing that you're doing this week, or whether this is for the rest of your life. And I think one of the things that confirmed that this was for the rest of my life was the need to rename a bunch of files. I shouldn't say that. I should say process a bunch of files. It wasn't always renaming, but there are files that sometimes you need to be able to rename in bulk, or you need to process in bulk. And that's what KRenamer makes possible. And what a beautiful, beautiful thing that is too. So I'm gonna make a couple of different files here. I'm just gonna call them foobar baz blah quirk and neon. So that's six files in my RAM disk. Open up krename. So, oh yeah, let's finish this story. And the fact that Linux made it easy to bulk process, like pretty darn trivial in some very clever GUIs like Thunar, because I didn't know about krename until very recently, or you know, through simple scripting, relatively simple scripting. I mean, it's not simple when you're just learning it, but you know, it gets really easy really fast. Okay, so here's krename. I'm going to add some files to it. I'm going to go to my RAM disk. I'm going to select all of the files. And here they are. They're listed in krename. The destination is going to be, I'm just renaming the input files. This is a tabbed interface. So the step one is files. You add the files here. You can sort them differently, which is quite nice. That's kind of cool because, I mean, I don't know exactly why you'd need to, but I guess just for your own reference point, maybe, you know, maybe I want all the files starting with B up at the top, and then all the other ones down at the bottom in any order. You couldn't care less about the order there. Okay, so now they're all sorted. So now I'm going to go to destination. That's the next tab. I can copy files to a destination folder. I guess I could do that too. I could make maybe a new folder in my RAM disk just for kicks. I'll call it renamed. Okay, so that's the location now. There's a selection to overwrite existing files, which I don't need to do because it's an empty folder. And then there's a lot of different plugins. So you can do, for instance, a series number, which will process episode, season, and season number, I guess that must be. There's subfolder sort plugin. The plugin sorts files into numbered subfolders after renaming. There's date and time, EXIF, all kinds of plugins, so that you possibly don't even have to, you know, sort of figure out how to get to where you want to be. It might already exist. This is an amazing application. There's increase counter, which just adds a given offset to numbers in file names. So if you have images, you know, if you have images called 01, 02, 03, and so on, but you want to start them at, I don't know, 101, then you can do an offset to, you know, plus 100, and then it knows to offset those. So I'm not going to enable any of these because, I mean, these are just sample files, really. And then I'm going to go to the file name, and this is where you get to structure the whole thing. And best of all, you get a preview. You get a live preview of what would happen to those files if you were to do the thing that you are saying that you want to do. So, and this is amazing. So there's a prefix, a suffix, file name, and extension. And these are all fields that you can just fill out. So it's there's no mystery here, you know? It's super simple. So the prefix, I could do a date, I could do a number. I'll do a number. And then I'll do for the file name, I'll put an underscore. So it's number underscore, and then maybe I'll do let's see, APL1-3 underscore again. And then the original file name, which I don't have to do anything for, that's implied. It understands that I'm not replacing the file name. Although, if I wanted to get fancy, I can click the little info button and learn all the different variables available to me, and there are many. So there's old file name converted to uppercase. That's the ampersand. That's cool. There's a dollar sign, which is just the old file name. But I mean, there's you have control over all of this. So the old file name is presumed. It is something. It assumes that you're using the old file name. If you're not, for I don't know, some reason, you can just one of the fields is called file name. You can just give it a custom name. So I could just call them all hello world. And then I've got 1_APL 1-3_HelloWorld, 2_APL 1-3_HelloWorld, and so on. So I mean you can override basically everything. You can capitalize, you can use the old file name but convert it to lowercase or uppercase, or just use the original file name. So lots of options there. You can change the suffix. So, add something at the end of a bunch of files, and then you can, what else can you do? Use a different extension. So you can have them all be use original. No, I want to customize the extension, so I'm going to do .txt. So now they're all .txt files. Oh, I don't need the dot. Okay, just .txt. It puts the dot in there for me. And now I can finish. It tells me that it's working and that it has finished, and I can close that window to close out of that application. And yes, there's all the files in the renamed directory, and they've been copied there. They haven't moved there. They've been copied there. And of course, I could have adjusted that as well. So all of those things are, I mean, it's just one of the most configurable renamer tools. And honestly, I mean, there's a lot of tabs, a lot of buttons, a lot of fields, but if you, as long as you don't see, a visual complexity and panic, like it is really, really intuitive and really, really powerful, really, really easy and not intimidating. Like this is a renamer tool that you would use gladly if you had to rename stuff. Quite frankly, I can see myself using it a lot. Because I do get bundles of files from like Humble Bundle and things like that fairly frequently, and I'm often renaming them or at least appending something to their existing names to classify them for myself. So I can see myself using KRename quite a lot. So very, very exciting discovery. Definitely, definitely check that one out. And then the last one for this episode, well, technically not the last one, but I've done the last one, KRFB. So the one before KRFB, so that I don't have to remember to do KRFB, is K Reversi. And that is a game that I'm pretty sure I've played this before. The goal, it looks like the game, I think it's, well, who cares what it looks like? It looks like Reversi is what it looks like. There are two colors of beads. White and black. Well, at least by default. Do I have a settings change? I can use color, different colors, so red and blue. I can turn that off. Oh, and that's the only theming for a change. Oh, interesting. That's kind of disappointing for a KDE game not to have an Egyptian theme. I'm very upset by that, even though I haven't been using the Egyptian themes for the past couple of games. Anyway, two different colored beads on a grid board. The goal is you place a colored bead on flanking sides of a different color, causing those beads to change color. So if there's a white token, white bead, and then a black bead, and then I place a white bead. So I've got white, black, white. Then the moment I click, why isn't, did the computer win already or something? No, it's my turn. It doesn't seem to be letting me. Oh, I can't do it there. Okay, interesting. That's a subtle. Oh, I forgot what color I was. That's why. Okay. So, darn it. Okay, anyway, white, black, and then I place white, then suddenly I've got white, because that black one in the middle, it had to flip color when surrounded. So, here's another setup here. I have to remember what color I am. So, here's black, white. So, I'm going to place a black token at the end of that sequence, and now I've got a row of four black beads instead of white beads. There is a sort of a hint mode where you can show legal moves, so you can see where you would be allowed to place a token to reverse stuff. It gets pretty pretty complex. I'm trying to imagine playing this game in real life because I just feel like you really kind of have to look around a lot for the things that get flipped. There's also a very weird kind of thing where it's not super clear when the effects of your turn has ended and the effects of the computer's turn has begun. So sometimes it looks like you put a bead down and you think you know what got flipped, and then all of a sudden the computer secretly plays and a bunch of other things flip. And you think that that was a result of what you did, but it's not. It's just that the computer had taken a turn. It's a really neat, it works diagonally as well. It is a very cool game, a lot of fun. I don't know how much I would play it in real life because I do feel like there's a lot of sort of back and forth, and I don't know that I love that mechanic all the time of where you feel like you've just made real progress towards winning and then oh, the whole board changes out from under you. I can see why some people do like that. I'm not saying it's a bad mechanic. I'm just saying a lot of times for me, it just makes it seem like the game is going to go on forever. Like there's no hope of ever anyone winning because it just things keep flipping. And at that point I just start putting arbitrary things down because I just feel like it's all down to chance. Like, well, who knows what's going to flip next? Who cares? I'll flip what I can. I'll just put down beads to get the game over with. So I don't think I would actually sort of latch onto this, but it is a well done game. It's relatively quick, so you can kind of get through a game pretty quickly, pretty easily. And it looks like I won. I got 37 beads to the computer's 27 beads. That was on easy mode, for the record. So that's K Reversi. I do feel like, what is it just called, Reversi in real life? Like, is that the game? I don't know. I've definitely seen this game before. Is it Reversi? I guess it is. I guess it is just called Reversi. That doesn't sound like a real game to me. Ah, okay. It was invented in 1883. Othello, a variant with an initial setup, was patented in 1971. Okay, there you go. So Othello is the game that I was thinking it was. Well, that's it, I think. That's as far as we're going to go today because the next one in the list is Krita. And you had better believe that I have stuff to say about Krita. It's one of my favorite applications, I think, maybe of all time. It's an amazing application. I actually wish I could use it even more than I do. And I do use it a lot, and that's what I'll talk about next time. I'll tell you exactly what I do with Krita. It's a great application. Check it out in advance. Until then, until next time, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next week.